This podcast is brought to you by Toasted Marshmallow Adventures Studio. Contact them at gettoasted@toastedmarshmallowadventures.com for all of your podcast production needs.
Good morning and welcome to Not Everyone Gets a Trophy with Amy and Mo.
Well, good morning and welcome to our show. It's Not Everyone Gets a Trophy with hashtag Princess Amy and Mo. I've had a great morning. How about you, Mo?
I mean, it's just starting, so it's amazing. It can't be bad when you're just starting off, right?
It's Monday. We love Mondays.
4:30. That's when I wake up. But here today, our next speaker is a licensed clinical professor counselor, ACDC therapist, and also EMDR knowledgeable, certified. And over the last few weeks, she has been through some difficult life circumstances that have led her to seek help outside of her comfort zone. Today, here to share her experience in her three-day EMDR intensive sessions. And this kind of came about with one of our last speakers, Stephen Ammon. So I think this is like one of our success stories that we can put in the books. So I'm very, very excited to speak with Laura Marsters. And we've worked for a couple years now. You trained me when I actually started working with you. So welcome today.
Welcome to our show, Laura.
Thank you.
So like I said, you're our success story so far. And I love that about it because...
We're like 3.5 months in.
Yeah.
We've had so many people reach out to us and we've referred them out to resources. And here you are.
Yes.
That's so amazing. Like it's such a good feeling that what we're doing here is actually getting out into the world.
And I've been impacted more than I can even express. I saw Mo, let's see, I took the whole week off last week and Monday as well. And when I returned to work, I believe on Tuesday, I just had, you know, prayer hands and a big gratitude, expression of gratitude for Mo for referring me and making me feel comfortable knowing that it was someone that you had gone to school with. And, you know, I think that's a trepidation for a lot of people in therapy is they don't want to go and unless they know what it looks like or unless they know what, you know, what's the room going to look like and what's the process going to look like and who's this person that isn't going to share very much about themselves. And that makes the whole therapy process even more mysterious. So it was just really nice to have a referral for someone that you knew personally.
So even being like a licensed professional, you still had those fears going to a place for help.
And I would say it's even more than that because she's not just a therapist counselor. She's someone who actually understands EMDR.
Yes.
And she's going into EMDR like myself, who I know EMDR, but I know nothing about this 3-day extensive EMDR, right? That's something that it's not offered very much, but something that when we talk about it, it seems very outside the lines. Like, whoa, like what? Like 3 days? Like,
I'm supposed to turn around?
No,
in 3 days.
Right? Like society tells you, you know, IOP 3 days a week, 5 days a week, hypothetically. But when we're talking about EMDR, intensive EMDR, like it's whoa, it's like it's a new thing. That Stephen has been able to do and continues to do because there is this, he honestly loves what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring Laura in because I wanted to learn more about that. I haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
And for our speakers to hear somebody come into our show and to say, this is what I offer,
mm-hmm.
it's one thing. But then to have somebody else come in and follow up and say, everything he said is true.
Right.
Are you validating that? Like, did you get that vibe?
I am validating that. And I'm going to go back and answer your question, too. You said, so even as a therapist, you had that trepidation. I think that as therapists, sometimes we have more trepidation because we walk in thinking, really, what can they do? Like, I know I know all this. Right. I, you know, if a therapist was going to be able to help me, I would have already helped myself.
You help
they don't,
yourself.
Yeah, they don't have any tricks that I don't have. So there's trepidation about that, and also knowing that this person is there to help you see things that you don't see, and I don't think that therapists really want to. Want to admit that there are things that they are still blind to,
yeah.
But we don't know what we don't know, right?
Well, so. Mo says, like, when you go see a therapist, like, you ask the therapist who their therapist is.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely,
right.
Because if they suck, then now you know who to go to.
Yes.
Either to complain about them or because you know where to go.
I went to a training once at Boise State, and there was a leader, I can remember his first name. He's actually a really well known online anyway, and he said someone said, well, yeah, therapists should go to therapists, and he was like, that's not necessary. And I thought, who are you? Like, what did you study?
What?
did you go through, right, have you gone through therapy? Because now I'm wondering why I'm learning about therapy from
why
someone
am I
that doesn't
class? I need to get out. Can I get my money back? This is right. Expensive. Boise State's expensive.
Yeah, like right. you really have to love what you do enough that you actually do it yourself.
Right. And I'm not dissing on Boise State, because I got my master's degree from Boise State.
No, I graduated from there.
And this was just in the student union building, so they were renting space for this training. But it was interesting that he said, therapists don't have to go to therapy. And I just thought that was really an interesting confrontation.
And there's truth to that. You don't have to.
Yeah.
Should you? Probably.
Yeah.
Because the amount of stuff that you get from your clients, the amount of things they tell you, it's not healthy to just like, I'm just going to swallow this and pretend
goodness.
Like it doesn't do anything.
Absolutely. And what we're going to talk about today is trauma, right? And so trauma-informed care tells us that we have to recognize the signs of trauma. We have to be prepared to treat them and to respond to them and not re-traumatize people. And then the huge piece that people don't talk about is that there's research out there that says that that people that go into helping professions are far more likely to be traumatized than people that go into other professions. So we are already traumatized. If we haven't done that work and we hear someone tell a story like our story, it's going to re-traumatize us. And then we're not being good, healthy therapists. Providers. Right.
And we're still not first responders.
Right.
Which to me is it's insane.
Yes.
Because the amount of subconscious ugliness that we receive mm-hmm. is as bad as a traumatic experience, a somatic experience.
Absolutely.
So I hope that we can somehow be able to change that, because we are there day and night in 24 hours, psychiatric, outpatient, medical, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And we do get a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And even though we're not there immediately, we get the back end of things, the whiplash that sometimes is worse
right.
at times.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, let's hear about your trauma,
yeah,
story.
Okay. It started off with me telling you about it and say, hey, listen to this,
yes,
right?
Yes. So, and it even starts a few days before that. So truth is, Mo and I have worked together for years, but weren't, they're not super close, right?
Yeah.
But he just happened to walk past me one day and he says, hey, Lara, your energy's off. And I was like, yeah. And then a few hours later, he came to my office and I was just really going through some stuff. And the truth is that the 4 weeks prior to my first session of this intensive EMDR, I don't think I had an hour without crying. I was crying myself to sleep. I was crying at work. I was going home. I was going into my office and closing my door because I knew that I would sit there and work and I would just start to cry. My whole world had been turned upside down. And you probably hear, I'm choking up even right now. However, not an hour without tears. For 4 weeks. And so Mo came in and I just happened to have just received some additional information and couldn't stop crying and was super embarrassed. That's another piece of being a therapist that I'm projecting. Of course, this might not be real for everybody, but I always think I'm supposed to have it all together and that I'm not supposed to be crying at work. I'm the department supervisor, you know? I mean, I should not be crying at work, but I am also human. And so I was just having this extreme emotional experience. And Mo told me about this guy that does this this intensive EMDR. And I was like, oh, I love EMDR. I did it once about 20 years ago. I had a really traumatic birth and with my youngest daughter, and she nearly died. And I could not talk about that experience without just really shutting down and feeling withdrawing from the conversation and being tearful. And so I did that, and I can talk about my birth experience now and have a natural reaction to it. I want to say normal, but not specifically normal, but you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of knew what to expect. And then because I had such a positive experience, I went to San Diego for a 3-day EMDR training. So if I got the supervision, then I could move forward and be an advanced EMDR provider. But I have not pursued that because I work at inpatient, and my boss said, oh yeah, we'll never use that here.
Yeah.
But it was good to know.
Yeah,
which could be factually incorrect. I mean, with this intensive EMDR, it is
absolutely
possible.
Right.
So maybe I just don't know. Like, I never take an answer. It's always just not right now. Okay, I can get that.
Right,
but never. I don't agree with that. So, anyways, continue.
No, but I want to say one thing that I do want to say is, just because you have that certification, the supervision, it does not make you someone who should be doing it.
This is true.
And I've said this before, and I say it all over: is just because I go by the Michael Jordans does not make me
a basketball player,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It just means that I had enough money to spend $100, $200, $300 in Jordans.
Right.
Right. And that's what EMDR is you pay like, I think like $1,800, $3,000, whatever it is. You get supervision and there it is.
Absolutely.
But if you don't love what you do, if you don't love the brain and what it comes with, then you're really going to mess people up. Like you're going to
have their money.
Yeah. Yes. And I said that the other day. There is no mediocre EMDR therapist. Either you're completely awful or you know what you're doing.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I think that's just my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
Yeah.
So keep going. So now in terms of like, you know, I'm sitting down with you. I remember sitting down with you and the door was open. I'm like, man, the door is open right now. Remember that? Like, mm-hmm. And we're like, maybe should I close it? No, I'm not going to close it.
Yeah, let everyone hear her cry though, right?
No, but it wasn't in the moment. It was something that should happen.
Yes.
Which I never planned to it. And in that day I did walk by and I was like, dang, your energy's off. And I was expecting a smart-ass comment because Laura is very, very smart. Like, I'm always trying to compete with your IQ level.
It's not IQ. I actually deflect with humor, and it is a trauma skill. Yeah.
But it's the smartest, like, response ever. And that day, you responded, you're right.
I believe.
And I was just like, oh, boom. And it hit me, and I was like, that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not ordinary. Something's off.
Right. And I had such a deep approach. I had such a deep appreciation that you recognize that just from us, like ships passing in the night, you know, which made me more likely to open up to you when you came to my office. So, again, just huge gratitude, because lots of people, they put on their blinders. They, you know, they might see someone crying and just walk by, or you know, something's not right and you don't approach because you're in a hurry or you can't be bothered.
You don't want to slow down.
Right. Or you're uncomfortable. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with tears. We see that in our therapy groups, right? Like, there'll be someone crying and someone else will get up and take them a tissue. And I usually shut that shit down fast. Like, did they ask you for a tissue? Because if they didn't ask you for a tissue, don't rescue them by bringing them the box.
Yeah.
Because that's your discomfort, not theirs. So.
And subconsciously, what you're telling them is stop.
It's not okay to cry.
Yeah.
Right.
Even Absolutely. Though the intention is... good, the outcome is bad.
Yes.
Because absolutely. Now it's like, stop crying. Here's a tissue.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that really is all about the person that handed the tissue. Like,
see, Amy, that's why I allowed her to cry, all right? Without closing the door.
Right.
Okay, well. Today I'm all about love and light, and I think I already said that. Okay.
I love it. Every day we should be about love and light. Okay, so skipping forward. So I went to see Stephen. He said, okay, this is an hour long intake. We're just going to talk. I'm going to tell you about the process. And I talked for it was supposed to be an hour. Did I say an hour? I think I spoke for an hour and a half. Yeah. And I definitely felt guilty about that. But I had a lot to say, like lots had happened. And I went ahead and scheduled for, that was on a Friday. Friday night, what I thought was my world turned upside down actually got flipped over even more. And so I called and said, hey, can I get in on Monday? Because he had offered me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And already, already that schedule that had been taken off his schedule. So I scheduled for, I believe it was November 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Yes.
And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so that whole week, I was just honestly kind of suffering. Just get through. I know I'm going to take next week, and I've got this therapy. But on Monday morning, I found myself really, really resistant. Like, should I go? Maybe I shouldn't go. Like, I'm fine. I don't need this. Yeah, but I still haven't had an hour without crying, right?
So yeah,
it definitely was time to go. I also had an interaction with my spouse, whom told me that this was a novel experimental therapy that and that I should just stick with traditional
talk therapy.
Or even,
what are his credentials?
Like, right? I often wonder that when
you're
people
speaking without a license, I will report you to somebody.
Right. Yeah. And it was about the expense, I think. But yeah, you should just stick with traditional EMDR if you're experiencing trauma. And I could do that, except that if I can't make it an hour without crying and my life really, truly feels like it's falling apart, then I can't just keep suffering and doing 1 hour a week. So this seemed like this is what I need. So I get there. I don't know how you want me to just dive right in.
Yeah,
you're doing great. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I get there on Monday morning and I update Stephen about what has happened, what transpired after I left at the intake session on Friday. And you know, we have kind of these rules of engagement as therapists and social workers about what we can and can't disclose about ourselves. And he shared with me that he had an experience similar to mine. And it was just like this exhale for me of like, oh, he gets this, because I had told a few people what was going on in my life. And I found that there was just lots of like, blowing smoke up my ass almost immediately. I know we talked about not cussing before we.
Not doing it. No. Like, I don't think anyone's going to wake up at 5 a.m. and worry about that.
Roll out that F-bomb. We're good.
I particularly like the phrase smoke up my ass because of the history to it. So they used to literally put like some kind of device up a woman's ass and blow smoke that would relax her for as a treatment for hysteria.
Oh,
which is
that's interesting.
Incredibly misogynistic.
I told you she's smart.
And you got fun facts.
I know. Well, and then if that didn't work, they would give them a hysterectomy or hospitalize them, which is actually extremely tragic. And it was a horrific way of treating women because they were emotional. Because being emotional is human. But
let me get you a tissue box.
Right.
Shut up. You're making me uncomfortable.
So I do like that phrase, smoke up your ass, because it truly is supposed to just like sedate women.
Okay.
So
do not try this at home.
Right.
And, warning.
And let me be clear. This isn't what Stephen did. He just shared that he had experienced something similar to what I had experienced. And it truly, like I said, it was like an exhale, because you know that you're being seen and heard and understood. Then we start with doing what, and I should have looked at how to pronounce the name, because this man is Swedish and, or Norwegian. Okay. Forgive me.
Who are you talking about?
I want to say Wim Hof. So we watched a video about this man that can control his body temperature in a really crazy way, and he can hold his breath for 6 minutes. And so
that's
this
a long time.
I know
that's
it's
like
a long time.
Navy SEAL.
I do that every time I go to sleep.
Apparently Navy SEALs
you're dead to me.
Well, Mo is extraordinary.
He goes to a barber. He has no hair on his head. Laura, he's not that extraordinary.
He is the phoenix. He dies at night, and then he's reborn every morning.
Thank you. Okay.
Apparently at 4:30 in the morning.
Yes, 5:30 in the morning.
Who does that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no. I barely have been asleep at 4:30 in the morning, for the record. Yeah, I tend to be a bit of a night owl. So we start with this, watch this video, and this guy actually has a little snippet on Goop Lab. So if you can't find him online, because I hashed his name, and then watch Goop Lab, and you'll see that he like runs in shorts in snow, and he can hold his breath for 6 minutes. And you said that's like a Navy SEAL. Apparently, Stephen told me that a Navy SEAL holds their breath for 3 minutes.
That's what I said. I said it's which not, is that's still, longer yeah, than a
yeah,
Navy SEAL.
It's
that's
incredible, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You were right on. I didn't know any of that. So yeah. I was like, oh, well.
So from the get-go, he starts brainwashing you.
Yes.
I'm kidding. No.
No, I was wondering how I could put this into the conversation. So actually, when you said starts brainwashing you, perfect opportunity to tell you that after day two, I got together with two of my friends, and one of them was telling me about how she was listening to this podcast and how this person said, well, you have to be really careful with EMDR because it will erase your memories.
Ooh.
Okay, so let's just be clear.
Kind of the opposite here.
This is not eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. But I'll tell you, 5 weeks ago, I was like, I want what Jim Carrey had on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where they literally were taking, you know, it was fictional, but taking
right.
memories away. So I explained to my friend, it doesn't actually take away any memories. So please, people that are listening, don't think that you're going to lose your memories.
Or hypnotism. It
right.
is not hypnotism either.
No, it is not. This is reprocessing trauma, taking it out of the folder that keeps it, that keeps you hypervigilant, that keeps you anxious and tremulous and reactive to similar type of experiences, right? So it takes it out of that file and just files it in a normal memory. So now I can look back at what happened five or six weeks ago, and I can
see
feel
what
like,
it is.
Wow, that it was small t trauma is what they say. So it was a traumatic experience, but I'm not crying every minute and I'm not tremulous and I'm able to sleep. So, yeah.
So this experience for you, like you were left with like no sleep, felt like you're losing your mind, crying all the time, probably not eating.
Absolutely.
That sounds
yes.
miserable.
I was definitely suffering. Yes. And I love that phrase, that Buddhist phrase that says pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional, mm-hmm. because that's so true, right? I mean, as humans, we're going to experience pain,
right.
but suffering, yeah, we don't have to suffer.
I just don't even like that word.
And I go back to what you said, right, to where Stephen offered you, hey, we can meet Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but then he offered you a different date, and of course you're going to take the second date, right? Why not?
Avoidance, right? We are avoiders.
absolutely. So, you know, in the irony of that is that Monday came and you're like, why did I wait? Right? And the way I see it is if you have a broken bone and the doctor says, hey, we can either go right now and fix it or should we wait till next Thursday? The obvious response should be no, let's fix it, right? But there is this disconnection between medical and your mental health. Like, and,
absolutely.
Yeah. My mental health can wait. Oh, but if it's medical and the doctor tells me, I'll do it. But if it's my therapist,
right,
then I have a choice.
Right.
You do have a choice regardless, but then you don't take him as seriously. And what I tell people is the best time to do EMDR is immediately following up a traumatic experience.
Well, absolutely.
I think Stephen said that in the podcast as well. He said, because you said, when's a good time? And he said, now.
Well, he didn't say the moment you come to my office.
Yes.
Which I thought it was the best answer I've ever heard, because once you have everything it takes as a human being to walk through those doors,
yes,
it tells me that regardless of who pushed you in that door, you allowed them to do so. And you're here and life has brought you here.
Yes.
So let's Let's get going.
Okay, so let's listen. Let's hear more about your experience.
And I think that if you're walking in that door and you don't have some anxiety, then you might be in denial. Or I don't know how to word that, but.
You should be nervous. Mm-hmm. There should be this hesitation because you're about to do something. I mean, in your experience, you already knew about it.
Right.
I think it makes it worse when you know.
And I knew what to expect, that we were going to start at 8:30 in the morning and we were going to go till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 days in a row, like take that in, right? Like
just you and Steven sit in a room processing this trauma.
Absolutely.
And let me highlight, right? If your trauma actually is surrounding a male,
yes.
3 days with a male, I'm just like,
phew, yes,
right. So, oof. Like, how did he erase? Because I always say to people, a good therapist erases his image immediately, uh-huh. right? Is able to say, I'm not a male, I'm not nothing, I'm just a human, and I'm your therapist.
Uh huh.
At what point did that happen, or how did that happen?
I don't think it did. I suspect that there was some power in his gender because it played into what has happened to me recently. And it also was really powerful that he normalized it for me within the first, 20 minutes. So that was really wonderful.
That sounds good.
That piece of self-disclosure, as therapists, we are constantly wondering what is appropriate self-disclosure. And there really are these people that self-disclose and they'll tell you anything about themselves. And then there are also these people that are like really aloof and they won't tell you anything. And my theory is that you tell clients, you self-disclose if it's in their best interest. Like, exactly. Is this about the client?
Yes.
If it is, then you share. And Steven did that perfectly. I think that he just read that this is, Lara's going to feel more comfortable if she knows that I understand what she's going through. And I did. So that was really, really powerful. So we did that, that breathing exercise. And I found out that I can actually hold my breath for 1.5 minutes, which was really, I only was able to do it one time in 3 days. We started with that, and you hold your breath for a minute, and then you go through the almost hyperventilating so that your body is really ready to take a deep breath, and then you hold it for a minute and a half. And I was like, yes. Held my breath for a minute and a half, which is
fabulous.
I
want to hold my breath. I'm like trying right now.
Okay. So tell me about that. I'm curious about that, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that accomplish? What does that show to him, to you?
So I should have read up on it more before this, because all I can really remember is that Steven said, so this holding your breath is going to bring all the oxygen to the center of your body. Your fingers and your toes and your legs are going to get tingly, and it's going to feel like anxiety. And he didn't say this, but I think that part of that is when you experience the sensation like anxiety, then you can actually believe that you're anxious. And so then that exhale. And then getting to breathe in again makes you go like, oh, I just controlled that whole experience of tingling and the sensation of anxiety. So if someone goes into EMDR with anxiety, and most people do because trauma triggers anxiety, isn't it nice to feel that sensation and then know that, oh, it can go away almost immediately with breath. So I think that was
the idea.
Yes, but we didn't actually talk about that. He talked about how your blood becomes alkalized. I don't know. Do you know the terminology?
Nope, keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going. Somebody at home is like, I know what that is.
I had a friend that is a psychiatrist, and he used to always say, Lara, if you would just say things with confidence, then no one would even question you. So, a lot of the things I say,
you took that really, really seriously. That's all that Lara does.
Hey, and let's face the facts. I know shit.
Yes.
Fun facts.
Yeah.
Like the smoke up your ass thing. It's interesting.
She's like, that wasn't actually true. Right. But everyone's like believing
it. You know there are going to be a whole bunch of people that are going to be like, is that true?
Oh,
and
man.
Actually, there is a movie that came out about 10.
One way to get a fast ticket to a hysterectomy. Right. Smoke up your ass.
Yeah.
This was like Freud times, so it was a long time ago. And the movie, I think, is called Hysteria. So it's interesting. It's not for everybody because it is kind of risque, but.
Risque. Yeah. I like how you said that.
Yeah. So we did the deep breathing. We did that. We started each day with deep breathing, and then we moved into something that was super unexpected. So there's part of me that's like, I'm going to tell everybody what to expect, and then but they might think that they shouldn't go because they won't know what to say. But the first thing that Stephen asked me is like, okay, oh, really important piece. This is what makes this legitimate in my mind is he uses a program on his laptop called HeartMath, and he puts a clip on your ear and then he shows you what your HeartMath looks like. So what your body regulation looks like. And he said, see this when it looks really spiked and you have high spikes and low spikes and really pointed, jagged lines, that's anxiety. That's hypervigilance. And so as we're talking about this, I'm watching my body.
Because anxiety lives in the body,
yeah.
Which creates your heart rate to go up.
Yes.
Thank you. Because yes. I argue with people at work, with patients saying that anxiety doesn't live in the mind. It lives in the body.
Right.
Thank you.
It totally does. And I mean, practically the Bible on trauma, right, is the body keeps the score and how it gets, trauma gets stored in our cells. And you have to release that. It has to be released from the body or you're more likely to get sick. So, so traumatized people are more likely to be hospitalized or have long-term illness, heart disease, right? Yeah, I said that with confidence. Did
there
you notice
you
that? I don't know all
okay,
the
so
statistics.
What did he ask you? What did he ask you?
Yeah, I know. Big, weird question. He said, okay, so I've got the heart math on and now close your eyes and I recline my chair and get comfortable. And then he said, okay, so we're going to look back to your grandparents. And with your grandparents, I want you to visualize what their life was like. And I was like, I don't know. He actually asked me about what my grandparents' parents' lives were like. And I was like, well, I only know that like my mom's mom was in Alabama and her name was Big Mama. And my grandma had three sisters and one brother. Her brother was a racist. You know, and you just go through whatever you want. So I told him all that. And then I remembered that with EMDR, one of the beautiful things about it is that you don't have to tell anybody anything. So I don't have to talk at all as I am processing through and actually not sharing. In talk therapy, it's talk, mm-hmm. right? And in EMDR, I could close my eyes and I can just recollect all of those, almost like sorting through photos. And in training, they talked about it like you're on a train and you're just seeing these images in the window,
by.
Right?
Okay.
Yes. And I just kept seeing like photos. Like I don't know that much about my grandmother's family, but you know, I knew a few stories, and I also remember from Adlerian therapy that they say, well, you don't really have to know. It's whatever you think might be true because
the
your brain's going to believe
it.
It's true, right? So so I just processed through that, and I would know that I was done and that my heart math had kind of evened out. So he showed me what it looks like after. And they get these really rolling curved lines instead of that jagged up and down line. So when he would see that, then he would say, so what are you experiencing? And then we would talk about the experience in the body, kind of the gestalt of it. And then I worry that I just didn't use that term correctly, but whatever. Should have just gone with
go
it.
Go back to canceling.
Damn it.
So that's basically the process. So we started with my grandparents' parents. Then we started, and then after, like, I didn't know that much about him, so I don't remember if he asked me this question. But with everybody that we talked about, it was, and so now I want you to take a minute and think about what their lives would have been like if they would have gotten everything that they needed to be happy and healthy. And I don't know if he said happy and healthy, but he said everything that they needed. And that is so powerful just to consider what the world would be like if everybody got what they needed as children, right? So I shared with you today, Mo, that my grandmother was a camp cook in a mining camp in Pine, Idaho, after her mother had moved out. And so she was literally living in a tent with her father in Pine 100-ish years ago. And the likelihood of sexual assault and the likelihood of neglect and poverty and all of those things that cause trauma, right? Very high likelihood that my grandmother experienced those things. And it wouldn't surprise me because she was very hard. Like she just, you were going to cry. I'll give you something to cry about. I'll give you a pocket knife and you go, you know, cut a switch and then I'm going to beat your ass with it. Those were the types of things that I remember my grandma saying. So yeah, to think about what her life would have been like had she gotten what she needed as a child. Mm-hmm. And then hurt people.
Right? I say that all the time.
So then my father was very stoic. And I won't go into a lot of share. I will just tell you that on his deathbed, I said, "I love you, Dad." And he said, "I know you do." And he couldn't say it back. And he hadn't said it to me. I can't remember how. I don't remember if he ever said it. I'm not sure that he was that he was capable. So then to think about what my father, what his life would be like had he gotten what he needed. And so in the first day, in that 8:30 to 4 o'clock with a lunch break, we went through my grandparents' parents, my grandparents, maybe we might have started with my parents, but I actually can't remember for sure. But we might, yeah, I think we worked on that too. And of course, with your parents, you've heard your mom's story, you might have heard your father's stories, but they're all stories. They're not your experiences. So everything that I know about my mother is from her frame of reference, right? And so, but her frame of reference could potentially traumatize me. Because if I hear stories, which I did, about what my mom's life was like, it made me sad. And then I would see photos, too. She has several photos that I think, oof, you know, it's painful to see those images and pair them with a story. So I processed through that, and I suspect that I would be more tearful. I would have gotten more choked up.
I'm like getting teary just thinking about your mm-hmm. experience, and like I put myself in that place of mm-hmm. like, I wonder what I would say and how I feel. Mm-hmm. It makes me very like tearful.
Yeah.
But that's the crazy thing, that you right now are making an impact on Amy mm-hmm. and on myself mm-hmm. and on our listeners. That's life.
Right.
When you're able to turn something negative into something positive. Mm-hmm. The energy in this room right now is, it feels really good.
Good.
It feels very at peace. Yes.
In love one and thing, light.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I have been all about love and light. I've called every one of my sisters. I've called my daughter.
Nice. Yeah.
And one thing that, I mean, we can call it a day right now. Mm-hmm. And people would be like, sign me up for it.
Right.
What I am,
but
so,
I haven't even gotten to the really
right?
good
I know.
Stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, but one thing is that at day one, mm-hmm. in normal, the I don't know, just the expectation, I would have thought that on day one, you would have attacked the one thing that you went there for.
Right.
Not even there yet.
And,
so right.
And on day one, you don't even go near it.
Right.
Which is.
Yes. Yes.
Did it blow your mind?
Absolutely.
Were you like, I thought I was coming in here to just like,
I was
going to
talk about what happened in the last 4 weeks for the next 3 days, right? And no. And in fact, on day one, my mind didn't even wander there very much, which I thought was really interesting. And in hindsight, I realized that was avoidance. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired of crying and I'm so tired of hearing myself talk about this. And I'm so tired of thinking about it, but I couldn't think about anything else. And I couldn't talk about anything else. And I just couldn't do anything else except just keep going on and on. It was like I was in this horrible nightmare that just kept cycling.
You couldn't get away from it.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I had a similar experience, not in a physical form. I had a toothache for 4 days.
Yeah, and you can't get rid of it.
No, you can't get away from it. It's all you can think about. You can't think about anything else.
Absolutely.
For 4 days, I cried. I literally cried so much that I thought I was going crazy. I couldn't sleep. And then finally, it got fixed, and I was like, oh, my God.
Right.
It's a game changer. So like
the peace.
Oh yes, my gosh. Right.
So absolutely. I can see like this is an obsession
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
It's all you can think about.
Yes.
There's like nothing else makes sense. So I can relate on a different level, but okay.
Yes. So on day two, we show up and I'm not as I drove out from I live in Northwest Boise and all the way to Nampa, it's like 45 or 50 minute drive. And I wasn't scared. And that's because the first day was not actually all about anything that triggered a lot of discomfort. I mean, some, you know, to think about my mom and
dad.
Were
you actually kind of anticipating it now? Or like, yeah, I'm actually kind of excited.
Now I know what it's going to look like.
I can't wait.
Yeah, we're literally going to go through my entire life. And so great grandparents' lives. What was it like? Looks for heart math to stabilize, for lack of a better word. And then now close your eyes and let's envision what it would be like if they got their needs met. And then your grandparents, and then your parents, and then you in the womb. And that was really powerful too, because I think about, I was born in 1970. So like, I know that people smoked and they drank, and my mom was in management at Ma Bell. And, so she was working and a feminist and, you know, so I'm just thinking about all
Boom.
Of those things,
there it is.
Right?
There you are.
Right.
You just described yourself right there.
Except I didn't smoke and drink when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was, God, my mom's going to be mortified. Never going to let her listen to this.
But Big Mama would be happy.
Big Mama. Yes. Yes, exactly.
She's going to be real excited about this.
Yes, exactly. No, my mom accepts me. She accepts me unconditionally. So it'll be fine.
How did you sleep?
I got 6 hours of sleep, and it was the first time in 4 weeks. Thank you for asking that, because I had forgotten. Oh. So I typically stay up till about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I sleep until 7:30, and then I don't get to work. Well,
oh, I know when you get to work.
Right, I get to
30
work.
30 minutes late.
30 minutes.
To 45.
Always, like, I'm supposed to be there at 9:30. I'm kind of like, can't be bothered. And I get there because we have a meeting at 9:30.
And then I stop you at the time clock, and then I make you even more late
and
for
Kathy
you.
And Kathy has just assured me that it's fine. Just, Lara, just get here. Like, we like that you work late. So I will often work 10 to like 7 p.m. It's just my circadian rhythm. Not a morning person. And with this whole experience of trauma, I was not sleeping. I would take if I took a Benadryl 3 months ago, I would sleep 12 hours. Like, I'm just super lightweight, and it affected me really, really heavily. And I would take a Benadryl and I would sleep 2 hours, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night and my heart would be racing, and my thoughts would just be, you know, I'd be ruminating, and literally felt like my heart was beating in my throat, and I just couldn't sleep. And after that first night, yeah, it was 6 hours, and I took one Benadryl and I woke up feeling refreshed. So it was like, wow. And but then I also would fall asleep during the sessions, and he goes, that's okay, because sleep is, when you're in that level of sleep, you're still processing through your stuff. So sleep is an opportunity for you to process through your stuff. Oh, and that's the opening line to Dune too, right?
Yeah.
If you've seen the movie, right? That's when you're processing through that stuff and like learning about yourself. So so it was okay. Yeah, I would literally fall asleep for 2 or 3 minutes, and almost every single time, and I was embarrassed. And he's like, no, you're exhausted. When's the last time you slept? Like, well, I slept 6 hours last night, and I was so impressed. And he's like, 6 hours, Lara, you haven't had REM sleep probably for 4 weeks.
Maybe 4 years, Laura.
It could be. Well, I used to, prior to this experience, I would put my head on a pillow and I fall asleep within 2 minutes. Everybody has always teased me that I fall asleep faster than anybody that they know. Now, fun fact about Laura, if my parents started to fight in the when I was a child, what would I do? I would go and my mom would say, we would be fighting and I'd be like, the fight would be over. And then where's Laura? Laura's sleeping. Yeah. So I can fall asleep faster than anybody I know. Yeah. And I sleep really well for about 5 or 6 hours.
Bob avoidance right there.
Right. Absolutely. Ooh. It is a trauma response. Yeah. So yeah, of course I was doing it in Steven's office. I'd be like, oh. Yeah, fall asleep. So day two, we talked about what it was like when I was in the womb. Then childhood, it was infant to three, and then three to six, and six to 12, I think. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I don't have any memory of my second grade year, which is really fascinating because I know I went to Garfield Elementary, but I don't have any idea like where the class was. And I have vivid memories about what the classroom looks like and who my teacher was and how I felt about myself and whether I believed I was smart or not smart, you know, in kindergarten and first grade. But in second grade, I have no recollection, which is really fascinating because it was a big transition
Which is a red flag mm-hmm. For a therapist, it's like, okay, all right, Absolutely. Now I know where to go.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So it's just like, just sit with that, you know, and some of those time periods were longer than others because he's looking for the response in your body to know that you've processed through that. So we got to high school on Tuesday, and how are we doing on time?
We're good. You take it.
Okay. So we got to high school, junior high and high school, and I really kind of hit a wall in that I know that I don't like anger. I deflect with humor. If people get angry, I fall asleep. I used to sit in therapy groups as the facilitator, and if people got angry, I would start to yawn, which was really like, oh, you know, it's terrible when your therapist yawns. It's like, am I boring you?
I'm yelling at you. Right. What'd you say?
Right, exactly. So if anyone ever got upset in therapy groups, right, I would start to yawn. And so I would have to explain that. Self-disclosure, right? This just no, don't think that I'm bored or that I think that you're disinteresting. It's just it's a trauma response. So, a lot of work about allowing anger and what it is to the beliefs that are associated with not expressing anger. So good girls don't express anger. Put a smile on your face, Laura, and be happy, Laura. And I mean, I got lots of messages throughout my life about my body and being overweight and being nice. Laura, you have to be nice. Count your blessings, Laura. Laura, why aren't you smiling? Laura, you have such a lovely smile. You should always smile, you know. Be thankful. No, I'm just fucking mad, okay? Oh, can I just be mad?
Wake up. If you're listening right now, wake up. Stop yawning.
Exactly. Amy said slip the F word in there, so I did, yeah.
That's what I like. Now we're awake, Laura.
So I really struggled with being angry. And in this whole experience, I've been sad and crocodile tears and I didn't feel like I was playing victim, but I mean, I definitely felt victimized. So I probably was playing victim, but I couldn't be mad. And I went home mad and I didn't sleep as well. I slept about 3 hours. Took a Benadryl so that I could sleep 3 hours, woke up, was awake for about 2 hours, fell asleep again for about an hour and a half. And then it's like, oh, I got to get there. And I was late.
Did he predict this would happen?
No. Okay. He didn't tell me anything about that. But as I was driving there, I'm like, I don't want to go to this today. And mm-hmm. I was just like raging mad. And I was incredibly uncomfortable with it because Laura's not supposed to be mad, right? So so the whole time I'm driving, the 50-minute drive, I'm just like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I'm just like, ugh, just angry. And I got there and I told him, I said, I just feel angry. And he's like, that's because we processed through and now you can allow yourself to be angry.
And then like, it was like, oh, a
right.
So, yeah. So do you feel like him kind of giving you permission, it kind of settled you a little?
I think that I had been traumatized and believed that anger is an inappropriate response to life situations. I was angry
about the anger.
That I was angry. Yes. Yeah. I mean, wow. I was angry about feeling mad because good girls they're not mad.
So
bitches are mad. You know,
yeah.
Those are people that are raging. They're mad all the time.
Nasty.
And if you know me, you know that either like lately I've been sad, but usually I just have a smile on my face.
You're like loving
I'm
light,
like,
Laura.
You know,
you are.
I bring levity to things.
You do.
Deflect with humor. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, masking trauma stuff, but it is who I am. And I like those parts of me. You know, I mean, there are experiences that we have that guide us and shift us or shift and shape us. And I like that. I like that I like witty humor and that I'll always kind of lighten something as long as I'm not taking away from other people. You know, you don't want to throw in a joke when someone's crying about abuse. So appropriately used, it's a strength of mine, I think.
But you were doing something that subconsciously you didn't know you were even doing, right?
Right.
So it was like to me, it's like, okay, like, for example, if I can't be happy and on the way there, I'm freaking happy. You're not noticing that you're happy because it's so uncommon for you to do it.
Yeah.
But the moment you walk in, you're like, see, you're happy.
Uh-huh.
You're like, what? You're happy. What you're doing is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yes. Yes.
So what
absolutely.
Happens on day 3?
So on day 3, I get there and I'm mad and I don't want to be there because I don't want to be mad because I'm incredibly uncomfortable about being mad. And my brain also, like, we've only gotten to childhood and my brain keeps going to what's actually present in my life. So the first day I was so avoidant of it. It was like, whoo, yay, we're not going to talk about what's going on in my life. And day 2, I was pretty focused, but probably not totally avoidant. But day 3, every time period that we started with, he would say, what are you experiencing? And I said, all I can do is think about what's present and the immediacy of the issue that's going on in my life. And so even though we moved through the later elementary school, junior high school, and then and we dealt with my daughter's birth experience again, and that was really emotional. And I was able to stay on that because that also, I think, subconsciously, I knew that that was really important to process through that. But every other time period in my life, I kept going to what was going on then. It was like I was just hyper focused. And I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried some more. And I left there. And I think that I have teared up, but haven't had any like tears actually run down my face since last Wednesday. So Thursday. You know, it would bubble up a little bit and I might get choked up, but I have not been consumed with tears and overwhelmed by sadness. And I feel like I have the skills, even though I don't necessarily have any skills that I didn't have 2 weeks ago, but I feel capable of dealing with what's going on in my life. And able to respond to demands for, you know, documentation and like things. There are action steps now that need to be done that I didn't want to do because I was being avoidant and I knew that I would just sit there and cry. And now it's just like, okay, I can do the next right thing. And mm-hmm. that feels really good. And I can respond to things instead of react to them. And
so at the end of this last 3 days, did you guys touch on that topic that was literally your obsession, like what you wanted
the
to
main
do
issue
that,
yeah,
that, the main mm-hmm. traumatic event? Did you guys talk about that?
We did very little talking, and that's one of the pieces that I love about EMDR is that I just went through, you know, I went through those images. So even when he said, okay, so let's look at your in the last day, we were still in K through three, and my brain would go to what was present. And he's like, that's okay. Oh, and I would fall asleep every single time. So it would trail off to what was present. And then I would wake up and then he'd say, so what were you experiencing? And he'll let me sleep, you know, because he believed that that was part of the process and it was good. So, yeah, I processed more about what was present for me than the assigned time periods, because I would think about that like I would think about my kindergarten, first and second grade years to my best ability for a minute or two. And then I would bring it back. Like, stop thinking about that. Bring it back. And I would try to bring it back. And then I'd fall asleep. And then I'd wake up and realize that I actually had kind of processed through the present stuff. Yeah. And every single period of time was like that day. And that's what I needed. After we took a break for lunch. And when I came back, Stephen said, let's just do that. Your body clearly is saying this is what you need to do. And so we spent the last three or four hours just with the current scenario that had been causing a great deal of pain and suffering for me. And like I said, I left just feeling totally different. And that's the cool thing about EMDR, is like, you don't really know what's happened because it's all happened on a cellular level, you know, mm-hmm. in your brain.
Right.
Which in the conscious level, you're expecting this almost immediate transformation in a way that you know to be true.
Yes.
But what I'm hearing is you almost walked out to like those movies that at the end of the day, like, they're like, what just happened?
Yeah, what just happened in there?
I was having the worst night and ended up being one of the best nights of my life.
Yes.
And it leaves you with that sensation. That's what you're giving me right now. The sensation of like,
oh. Like it was magical, but like unexplainable.
Yes.
But I'm transformed and I you can't explain it. They have to go through it. They have to experience it.
Absolutely.
Like, would you recommend like anyone to go, or someone who's going through a traumatic
event? Absolutely.
Like, I mean, who doesn't have trauma, right?
Right.
But like, how would you like tell people like go now, or go when you have a traumatic event?
No, go now, because it's all that childhood stuff that we're dragging around. I mean, your childhood experiences made you a nurse, Amy. You know that, right?
Yes.
Your experiences made you a social worker.
Because I'm so messed up. I knew that would help. But it gave me the insight.
Mess more people up so they can be like you.
The bigger the mess, the bigger the transformation.
That's what I'm saying.
I always say that.
Honestly, that's probably one of the things I do like that you've ever said, because there isn't a lot of things like that. But you just say the bigger the mess,
the bigger the transformation, the bigger the impact.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's, I've been sitting here listening to you, and I've kind of just been like reflecting on my path and my, and it's crazy. Like, and I'm sure everybody listening is doing the same thing, but I'm like, I know I'm here today because of all the things behind me.
Yes.
And I try my best to leave what I didn't like, but take what I did.
Yes.
Or things that have impacted me, so I can put the good stuff out into the world.
Uh-huh.
And so, yes, I was not, I don't think that I was designed. I don't think I had that vision that I was designed to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
But at this moment, like when I've gone through like my own therapies and listened here and done our thing, like I meant to be a caretaker.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
That's like amazing. I want to go. It's an obsession for me. I want more people to come in and talk about EMDR. I want more people.
Absolutely.
To go.
I just want to say that it's been like about a month and a half. I can't remember the dates exactly, mm-hmm. where I sat next to you in that chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, look, it took me 6 months,
mm-hmm.
to go through something similar.
Right.
Even more.
Yes.
Alone.
Yes.
I did it alone at my own pace.
Right.
And it took 6 months, probably a little more than that, mm-hmm. to where a healthy human, it probably took me about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, hey, if someone would have done something for me, in the way that I did it for you, mm-hmm. I would have done it. I was just wishing for someone to say, mm-hmm. there is a solution. But life wasn't that nice to me at that time.
Yeah.
Because I it wasn't life.
Right.
Right. I did the math in terms of the cost, because cost does play a big role into
absolutely
taking this 3-day. The cheapest EMDR person that I know here out of pocket is about $80. Mm-hmm. $80 for once a week, it's 4.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
And
so you're going to suffer for 4.5 years.
but you have to take into consideration that by the time each week goes by, like you, if mm-hmm. you wouldn't have waited that those 3-4 days, you wouldn't have mm-hmm. suffered. Mm-hmm. So when we think about 4.5 years, it's actually more like 6 probably.
Right.
By the time that a one-on-one, once a week mm-hmm. counseling creates the effect that you did in 3 days.
Right.
To me, that speaks
volumes. It's huge.
Absolutely.
I talk to you. I love to talk to you.
Yeah.
But I've seen you. We all work at the same facility. Mm-hmm. And like the Laura I saw 2 weeks ago, I guess, maybe 3 weeks ago too, I think we just stopped at the time clock mm-hmm. this last week. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just like could feel like your energy. Like you were just like not so tense and upset. I mean, there's still upset, like upsetting moments.
Right.
But oh my gosh, it was like, I just wanted that. I'm like, Laura, I just love that.
Yeah. It feels like night and day. And my mom saw me, my mom and my eldest daughter saw me on Wednesday after the therapy. And I cried on Wednesday talking about recollecting some things that were going on. But I also told them about the therapy and my tears were just different. I don't know how to describe it, except that it wasn't overwhelming sorrow and anger. It was like, this is a huge transition in my life that I'm experiencing, and inevitably I'm going to be sad. But the week prior to that, I was overwhelmed by sadness. And then I think that it's really meaningful that like on Saturday, I had some, you know, those action steps, or not Saturday, I'm sorry, on Thursday, I had some action steps to take. And I have some friends that are coming over and supporting me through that. So we did some things. And I was like, you know what we really need? We need to have a party. And and I used to throw parties at my house all the time, and
potties
I haven't.
Here.
Right? Exactly.
That's such a short story. Potties here.
When you make that voice, it reminds me that there's this funny video online about Germans' Balka party. And so, do you like to party? Party. Yes, I got my party pants, you know. And so we were like, we should have a freaking German sparkle party. Yes. And so Friday, I say to my daughter, will you like just throw together a little invitation that we can send out to just a small amount of people, just the people that have been super supportive to me in the last month? And so there were only like 8 or 10 people there. And then I think 3 people weren't able to make it. And it was kind of funny because the 3 guys that I invited didn't come to the party. And so it was just totally like a goddess fest. And we called it the Shimmer and Shine party. And we, everyone wore like sequins and kind of like burlesque-y kind of, you know.
Okay, outfits.
Oh, yeah. And
yay,
we had
lights, glamour.
So
love this.
Much fun. And I was like, this is who I used to be. And I had kind of lost myself. And then this trauma just like, I kept saying, I feel shattered. I feel shattered. And Stephen would say, be careful of the words that you use. Like, you're capable. You're processing. You're healing. And I'm like, I'm shattered. No, I don't feel shattered anymore. Yeah, I'm not shattered. My life is different. And I'm thinking about all the possibilities. Like, I'm really excited that I've wanted to go see, I've had 4 exchange students, and I've seen 1 in Germany a few years ago. I have exchange students to visit and one in Belgium and two in Turkey. And I envision myself, oh, we also installed a peaceful thought. And the first thing that came to my mind was me traveling alone and going to Turkey and walking down the streets of really busy streets with no fear of being a 51-year-old female in Turkey and just thoroughly enjoying myself. Wow. I love to travel. I've always actually wanted to travel alone, and I won't really be alone because I have two Turkish daughters that will be there to speak for me, translate and interpret for me. But yeah, I'm finding my happy thoughts, and the party was amazing, and I'm happy again. And I'm confident that I would not be here had you not referred me to Stephen, then sent me the podcast, and then just me thinking about that book, Shondra Rhimes, My Year of Yes, and just saying, like, just say yes, Lara. Like, yes, it's $3,600. Yes, you have the money. You know, I have some scarcity issues, but I'm just like, this. It's invaluable.
You literally cannot put a price on happiness.
No.
People can't suffer. You,
right.
You have to do these things for yourself. I truly believe that. Like,
absolutely.
Self-care, self-rituals, whatever you want to call it. You can't put a price on it.
Yeah.
I don't care the cost.
Right. And you know that there'll be someone that is listening today and they'll think, wow, that's way too much money. And then they might not even have an appreciation for, like, me saying, well, that's a fairly typical vacation for an American family, right? So trust me, you will get way more from this experience than sitting on a beach in Hawaii. And the truth is that if you do this experience, you might actually allow yourself to make some changes in your life and invite some possibilities and live a different and better life. And you'll probably be able to afford both.
You can have it all. You can do whatever you want. You have to just believe that.
Absolutely. Yes.
So before we go, this was a really great story.
I'm so overwhelmed. Yeah,
like,
no,
I'm
just,
so overwhelmed.
This is what we wanted. This is what Amy and I have been working for. Just, I don't think we want the kudos. We don't even want to make money out of this. We want to be able to promote an impact on our community.
Yeah.
We want to spread what we believe our community needs away sometimes from medication and for not cookie cutter approaches. Mm-hmm. And this treatment that you went to Stephen is very catered to the person, to listening to their body, their mind, and their story, sitting with them present and allowing the body, the mind to do what it's supposed to do. Because it can correct itself.
Absolutely.
if you have somebody who can guide you through that experience.
Yes.
Today, it sounds like you are able to express sadness in its purity.
Yes.
Versus sadness and anger together.
Yeah.
The energy within your sadness when you shed those tears is pure, to where someone can just be like,
Yeah. I mean, sadness is a natural emotion. Being angry is a natural, normal emotion. And I was suppressing those and shameful for those and overwhelmed by those emotions. And I'm just experiencing what it is to be human right now. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you.
We are very grateful. Yeah.
I am incredibly grateful to you. So when you say that you want to do this so that you can impact and improve the community, I mean, both of you are incredible humans. I'm only here because you're two of my favorite colleagues. You know, I walk on the unit to clock in the morning and Amy is my sunshine. I don't know if you know, Mo, that I would be like, she is my sunshine. You know, I'd sing, or ain't no sunshine, she's gone. Yeah, I just always sing. Yeah, I would sing a little sunshine song. And you, just your empathy and compassion for me and just the act of referring me to your friend and your colleague. It's just incredible. You guys have changed my life. And I know that you change lots of people's lives all the time. But this is my life.
So before we got to wrap this up, but before we go, is there like any last thoughts or things that came to your mind that you just want to like get out to somebody before we shut
just
this down.
Really, really do want to reiterate, you're not going to lose any of your memories. You might want them to be gone. They're not going to be gone, but they're going to be transformed and manageable.
Awesome. Yeah. So if you want a better life, if you want a more looking for happiness, looking for some joy, find an EMDR coach, find us, let us help you find the resources so that you are not having to suffer anymore. No one deserves to suffer.
Right.
It takes one decision to transform your life. Mm-hmm. One decision. Okay. So stop thinking about the money. Stop thinking about other things. Yeah. I just gave you that statistics, 4.5 years versus 3 days. You deserve that. You deserve the best. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Enjoy the holidays. I'll say it again. Be present with those who you love.
Yes.
Spend time and continue to make those transformation needed to impact others.
And after Thanksgiving with your family, you might need trauma therapy.
That's right. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Adios.